Every week, the Orange Fizz team breaks down the five most pressing questions about Syracuse athletics.
Holy cow, what a big-time defensive play!
No holds barred.
I paid the fool.
It's the Fizz Five.
Five!
The sun is shining, the birds are chirping. It's a beautiful day for another Fizz Five. Happy Friday. Alongside the newest member of Fizz Nation, Dan Shalom, I'm Tyler Aiken. Dan, how about you introduce yourself, say who you are to our listeners, and I'd like to be the first to say welcome to Fizz family.
Yeah, so I'm Dan Shalom. Tyler, thank you so much. You're the one that somewhat got me involved into the Fizz family, so big thank you to that.
I've been compared to Fran Brown with my recruiting.
I mean, hey, I'm a five-star recruit coming into this program,
I don't know about
right?
That.
So,
I mean, when was the last time we had another first-year SU student involved?
I'm the first. So I told you, I'm a five-star recruit.
I'm making
Fizz history.
But you're very good at a very young age. A little Derrick Rose in you. I can see that.
I'll take that.
Oh, definitely a little Derrick Rose in you. As we start to talk about basketball, Derrick Rose, we're going to talk about another topic, and that's Syracuse's new assistant coach. That's topic number one.
Number one.
If you had told me a few weeks ago that Syracuse would be hiring Dan Engelstad as its new assistant coach, I would have been like, first of all, who left to make the opening? And second of all, who the heck is Dan Engelstad?
Who is this guy?
Well, I'll tell you a little about him. First of all, Jerry McNamara leaving totally makes sense. Got to respect the move. Hope he does well. Engelstad makes sense for a lot of reasons. So if you didn't know, he has been for the last 6 years the head coach of Mount St. Mary's, lower-level D1 school. Through 6 years there, five losing records, one trip to the NCAA tournament. It doesn't really seem that impressive. But in the modern day of college basketball, when he has a transfer, he can basically guarantee it's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, hey, this guy is one of the highest recruiters in the nation. You talk about some of those recruits.
Well, highest recruiters in the nation.
I mean, he just dominates the DMV area, though. That's where Judah Mintz came from.
He dominates the DMV area, but he's good there.
He's very good there, and I'm very excited to see what he's going to bring in. That's something that Syracuse needs to improve on, is that their guards are not there right now. He's one of the top recruiters in the MAC, and I think that Syracuse really needs to turn it around with him coming into this program here.
First of all, not one of the top recruiters in the country. I don't even know if he's a top recruiter on the East Coast, but having another connection to the DMV is very big. When Brendan Strawn and Adrian Autry have already built up a reputation there, Syracuse is kind of building that as its second home away from the Northeast. But then also, the transfer I was talking about, Dakota LaFeu, that's the big thing. 17 points per game, all MAC first team last year. And it seems like every coaching hire in the modern era of college basketball, you need to bring a transfer with you. A team's not going to hire you unless you are bringing a player to that team. Syracuse basically hired a head coach and brought in LaFeu. Now, if he doesn't recruit to Syracuse, that's a different story, but I'd be shocked at this point.
I was going to say, do you think this is a failure if he comes in and he doesn't bring LaFeu with him?
I would imagine behind closed doors, there was some sort of guarantee that LaFeu is going to come here. He already put Syracuse in his top six. I would be absolutely flabbergasted, like 100% bamboozled, shocked, taken aback. It's going
to
happen.
It has to happen. He averaged 17.6 points per game last season. He was a first team in the MAC. Syracuse needs another role player like this guy to add to their roster. They need the depth.
Sneaky, sneaky part of this is that Syracuse has, before Engelstad was pulled to the team, 1 year of head coaching experience at any level. And that was Adrian Autry with Syracuse. None of the other assistant coaches have been a head coach before at any level. And so now you have someone who's been a head coach for 6 years at the D1 level, five more years, at the D3 level. So that's somewhat encouraging. Has he been very successful?
No.
Not really. But you have someone that's, you know, made those head coaching decisions for. Maybe that's kind of a part of it. You know, that's kind of what I wanted the football team to do with Fran Brown, because he doesn't have any head coaching experience. Maybe it would be nice to have a bunch of head coaches join him on the team, and that didn't really seem to happen. And so I can appreciate that aspect of it. But I don't know. I'm happy with it from a short-term recruiting sense, but I have no idea how long this guy's going to last at Syracuse.
I totally agree, but I think that you need somebody who has veteran coaching experience to be on your squad. You lose a guy like Jerry McNamara, who is with the program for decades upon decades. Syracuse needs another guy who has years of coaching experience. Even Jerry McNamara wasn't a head coach, but he somewhat acted like that for a lot of guards on this team.
Well, that's the thing. Syracuse went with another guard coach, and it's like, that's cool and all, but SU has three former guards as assistant coaches. I would love for Syracuse to have a true bigs coach, because Syracuse doesn't really have a true bigs coach.
No, they
don't. Sure, AG coaches the bigs, but he was a guard. He was a point guard. So at the end of the day, Syracuse doesn't have a bigs coach, and I actually wrote an article a few weeks ago, and the biggest thing that I was looking for was someone that can help in the portal, which Engelstad fixes. But in terms of a bigs coach, not going to happen. Now, I will say, very happy Syracuse went out of house. I was happy Syracuse didn't go for an alum or anything like that. I heard the name Devendorf pop up, which, to be quite honest, absolutely silly. Absolutely silly to bring up Devendorf. Hope he has a great broadcasting career. I think he will. But as a D1 assistant coach, probably not enough experience there.
Yeah,
so I was happy that Syracuse is finally starting to push out of the Jim Boeheim era, not just going to guys that played for him, starting to, you know, spread the program's wings, turn into something new.
I totally agree. This is a new start for Syracuse overall. And hey, maybe it's a short-term play to get the player they want, but I think that Engelstad could be here for a long time and have really helped this program start to build with his head coaching experience.
Well, we'll have to see. Things don't really remain for long in college basketball, especially with the transfer portal. That brings us to topic number two.
Number two.
The transfer portal giveth and the transfer portal taketh away. It's a hard phrase to say. It's a hard thing to swallow for a lot of programs, the transfer portal. But Syracuse has some guys it's eyeing to pull in. There's been some reports over the last few days. We just talked about LeFou, but now another visit coming this weekend from a Delaware forward.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this guy, TA. I think that Syracuse really needs to start hitting the portal hard. We talk about that DMV area with them bringing in new assistant coaches. This is a guy that can bolster your roster. They need to bring him now. He needs a good visit this weekend, and Autry needs to show him something that will bring him to this program.
The guy we're talking about, Jair Davis, a 6'7 forward at Delaware last year. Another guy who put up over 15 points per game at his former school, 17 points, 7 rebounds at Delaware. He's only 6'7, so he's probably going to play that more of a small forward role for the Orange. But that's fine. If he can get over 5 rebounds a game for Syracuse, of course, if he commits, that would be great. Dakota LeFou, like we were talking about earlier in the show, a 6'5 guard. Mount St. Mary's also 17 points per game. Syracuse is getting guys who can get their own shot, or trying to get guys who can get their own shot. I feel like both of these two players probably going to end up at Syracuse, but we have no way of knowing for sure. If they do, that's somewhat encouraging, because you look at the roster last year, Chris Bell not getting his own shot, Justin Taylor not getting his own shot, Malik Brown not getting his own shot. A lot of guys, especially in the front court, that just can't create for themselves. So there's certainly a little bit of encouragement there. There's not enough great shooting coming in. And Syracuse, in terms of all the different names you've seen tied to the program, haven't seen a lot of shooters there.
No, you haven't seen a lot of shooters at all. And I think Jair Davis is a guy that can fill Malik Brown's role.
Two different players.
I mean,
are you serious?
I think I know that Malik acted as a center, but that front court guy who's just a prolific type of forward that really pounds the inside paint,
that's going to be Eddie Lampkin.
That's going to be Eddie Lampkin, but Jair Davis can also fill that role. I think that he's another guy that can get his own shots like you were talking about,
but
and be prevalent inside of the paint.
I don't know if he's getting them in the same way as Brown in the ACC. I think his game is going to have to change up a little bit. But Davis can't shoot is the thing. Davis can't shoot. LeFou, not the biggest shooter in the world. I just wonder if Syracuse is kind of getting into a similar spot last year where maybe more guys that can create their own shots, they can be slashers, but are they able to shoot from deep so that Syracuse can distribute? I don't know.
You know who's one guy I turned to that could fill that?
Who?
Is Malik Mack, the Harvard transfer. For he's a point guard. He averaged around 16 points per game, third leading freshman in the country for points. Has been rumored to be looking at Syracuse. This is a guy that could
would
fill
he come if
LaFleu
comes though?
I don't know if he would come if LaFleu does.
And can
come.
He shoot is the question.
He can shoot. He led the he was the third overall leading scorer for freshmen in points.
Can
average.
He shoot threes?
He
though?
He shot 34% from the three.
So,
good enough though.
No, no I for think a it's point good guard, enough. Yes. But for a Syracuse team that needs someone other than Chris Bell to shoot threes, 34% is not good enough.
But I would take those points, though. You're not going to get that.
Again,
really
we're talking
else.
About. But if Syracuse pulls in Davis, if Syracuse pulls in LaFleu, there will be plenty of points. But Starling's not shooting threes. LaFleu's not shooting threes. Davis isn't shooting threes. Lampkin's certainly not shooting threes. Mac, not the guy I want shooting threes either. So
but who is shooting threes?
That's
then?
The thing. Syracuse needs to pull in a shooter. My two biggest needs in the offseason were a center that can rebound.
Got it.
Lampkin and shooters.
Still have
yet
missing.
Have yet to see even a spot up shooter connected.
I haven't
a name
one
connected
rumored.
With the program.
Haven't seen any.
That's concerning.
Very
that's,
concerning.
That's concerning to me.
I mean, this they might just have to change the way that they play if they're not going to bring in a true 3-point shooter. Teams are going to know that Syracuse can't shoot the three.
And that's what
it's
happened last year, and that's why Syracuse lost several games.
It's going to be way too one-dimensional offense. I still think Mac would be a good addition, and maybe he can get his three-point shooting up a little bit. It's better than any other option right now.
The whole point of the transfer portal is to get what you need, not get guys that you think could develop into what they need.
But there's nobody even there that they that would fill the need right now. Though.
There are shooters in the portal.
But not nobody that's going to come to Syracuse right
who
now.
Knows? Who knows? Who the one thing we do know is that there are some other players that have transferred out of Syracuse's program or are on their way out. And so we're about to talk about what they could do at their next destination with topic number three.
Number three.
All right. So Syracuse has lost a lot of players this offseason. And some players that... If you had told me during this season they were leaving, I wouldn't have expected. Malik Brown in the portal. Kwadir Copeland in the portal. Justin Taylor in the portal. Munir Hema in the portal. Peter Carey in the portal. Did I miss anyone?
Benny Williams.
Benny Williams in the portal. That's six guys, I think. Judah Mintz, no answer on quite yet.
Question mark there.
But it will be interesting to see and follow along with these players as they find their next destinations after Syracuse. Is there anyone that sticks out to you as, like, this guy could be super impactful or spread his wings because he's outside of Syracuse?
I think, honestly, it could be Malik Brown. They forced him into playing a center role this season, had 9.5 points per game, 7.2 rebounds. If you just put Malik Brown into his original position at forward, I think he could be just a star player on any other team. Maybe a mid-major, maybe a lower-end ACC type of team. But Malik Brown played so well in a position that he wasn't even supposed to be in that I think he could excel at his true spot on any other team, really.
Yeah, he is a true four. The thing is, if you play him at true four, you need a center that can stretch the floor. You can't play him down low with a center that can't shoot because that's just a recipe for disaster. Or maybe he just goes to a program where he can be their center, go to a league where most guys are 6'9". I think at a mid-major, he could be a very, very talented true five. Just because that's how the game is played at a lot of places. There are a lot of smaller players. The other option is that, or the other guy that I think could really turn into something bigger is Kwadir Copeland. Yep. It's another obvious answer, but he was in a spot where he was ready to become a starter.
He and wanted to be a starter.
I would imagine he was told by leaders within the Syracuse program that that was not going to happen with the Orange. This could go in two very different directions. I think he could become a lot more consistent. He's already flashed. He has a high ceiling. If he can raise his floor, then maybe he could really be something with the team. He could be a top three player on a decent program in this country. Or you see that with more minutes, you see a lot more downs than ups with Kwadir Copeland, which is possible. I don't know how likely that is. I hope the best for all these players. I think Copeland might learn that he is the perfect sixth man for a successful team and maybe not a starting point guard on a successful team.
Well, I think the reason he was so successful is because he had Judah Mintz to back him up all the time. He wasn't the star guy. The pressure wasn't on Kwadir Copeland. And in some games, you thought, wow, Kwadir Copeland plays better than Judah Mintz. He should be in this starting five, like in that U-Miami game. But I think the reason for that was because he didn't have to start. He didn't have to play all the minutes. He could go in and be an impact player when he needed to be, but the pressure wasn't on him all the time. And I think that's what makes Kwadir Copeland so successful. If he can do that at another program around the country, maybe a Power 5 school, I think that that is his role.
But that's not why he's leaving. He's leaving to be a starter.
He's leaving because he wants to be a starter, and I think he's honestly going to fail at a mid-major where he will be the starting point guard.
I don't know if he'll necessarily fail statistically, but I don't see a team succeeding if he's their best player.
No, not at all. I think that he needs other stars around him, and that just makes him better. But him standing alone at a mid-major being the star point guard, not the answer for a team. I don't think so.
To be fair, though, and I'll give him a lot of credit, the teams that have I've seen connected to him, for the most part, are teams where maybe he'd be like the fifth guy in their starting lineup or coming off the bench, like a Kansas or a Kansas State.
I saw that.
If he goes there, another school he's been connected to, McNeese State, that's where I see him being one of their star players, and who knows if that works out. I mean, McNeese State, a darn good team this year, over 30 wins. But I don't know if they would repeat that necessarily with Copeland. The other guys that have transferred out of Syracuse, Justin Taylor, I can see him, you know, if he gets a larger role where he can, you know, put up some shots, maybe he can be a successful, like, sixth man at, like, a James Madison. That's a school I've seen him connected to. Munir Hema, Peter Carey, Benny Williams. No idea what's going to happen.
No idea what's going to happen with them. Truly, I don't see Justin Taylor really materializing into that much. A starting five guy on Syracuse, now to go be a sixth man on a mid-major school or a Power 5 team, I don't really see much for Justin Taylor, to be honest with you. I really didn't like the style that he played this year, and I don't think it's going to translate very well when he goes elsewhere. As for the other two guys, or three, not really sure what's going to happen. They didn't really get that many minutes with Syracuse. Who knows if they can become a Kwadir Copeland type of player at another program. But as of right now, I don't see much for them.
Well, we're talking expectations for guys on Syracuse's basketball team or people leaving the team. But now let's get into some expectations for Syracuse football. That's topic number four.
Number four.
The spring game, just over a week away for Syracuse football, a chance to see Coach Fran Brown on the turf for the first time in a game situation, a chance for Syracuse fans to see some of these new players, transfers, freshmen, meshing with each other for the first time. Dan, is there anyone you're particularly excited to see out there?
Yeah, I think it's got to come back to the two Georgia wide receivers, Jackson Meeks and Zeed Haynes. These are two guys that need to play well this season alongside Aronde Gadsden. We know that he's going to be a great player this year coming off of injury, but Zeed Haynes and Jackson Meeks are two guys that will make or break the Syracuse offense. Kyle McCord's a proven player in the Big Ten. He knows how to play good football, but these two wide receivers really didn't get that many reps over at Georgia. And I'm excited to see how Fran Brown integrates them into the lineup this season. Really, if they're slot, if they're going to be more, you know, screen guys, what it's going to be. But I'm really excited to see these two out there on the field. I think that those two really decide how Syracuse's season pans out.
Well, we're not going to be able to see Meeks on the field because he's dealing with a hairline fracture. So he won't be in the game. Aronde Gadsden won't be in the game.
He won't be there. Nope.
You know, this is an option for a lot of those lower-level offensive pieces to show out and maybe win some extra reps coming into August practices and then fall games. In terms of anything else on the offensive line was pretty bad throughout the year last year for Syracuse. And so if the O-line can look somewhat decent, and I know it's hard to gauge how an offensive line plays in a spring game, but I just want to see the size out there and a little bit of chemistry between in the trenches for the Orange. I think that would be very big because you need to give McCord time to pass to all those players. But going to the defensive side, I'm looking at the secondary. How much is Deuce Chestnut
going to be back
at Syracuse for the second time? That'll be interesting.
Yeah, he had a down year at LSU, basically played two games and then sat the rest of the season, was a star with the Orange when he was on the roster in his freshman year. I'm really excited to see this guy back on the field in the 315. He was so dominant when he was playing for Syracuse. He needs to be a role player that can be there game in, game out, lead this team in the secondary, because that was also a weak spot last season for Syracuse as well. Their secondary really got depleted after the freshman year of most of their guys who hit the transfer portal. And now with Deuce Chestnut back, it's a big addition, but still a huge question mark on if he's actually going to perform.
Someone I'm hoping takes a big step up, Jaden Bellamy. He came in as a starter midseason because of some injuries for Syracuse, and he looked all right, a better tackler than he was in coverage. He had two big fumble recoveries throughout the stretch of the season, so he was a physical guy. I'd like to see some better coverage out of him, see if he can keep that starting spot. But the spring game will be a big, big day for Orange fans. The start of the Fran Brown era. You can follow at Orange Fizz on X or Twitter or whatever the heck you want to call it for coverage of that and updates over the next few weeks. We're moving from basketball to football, back to basketball, but of the women's variety. Stick with us for topic number five.
Number five.
De'Asia Fair, the third leading scorer in college women's basketball history, has declared for the WNBA draft, and she's being mocked as a top 10 pick right now. ESPN has her going 10th overall to the Connecticut Sun, which would mean in driving range for some Syracuse fans to see her play. But here's the thing. 5'5 would tie the shortest player in the WNBA. And there's always talks about, the, you know, the veteran WNBA players talk about how Caitlin Clark is going to struggle and adjust in the WNBA. It'll be interesting to see how De'Asia Fair adapts to the WNBA, the increased size, the increased skill.
You know, what also scares me, Tyler, is that just 15 out of 36 players drafted in the 2023 WNBA ended up on opening day rosters. De'Asia Fair's spot is not guaranteed, even being projected a number 10 overall pick in this draft. The size, of course, is scary, but she's such a prolific scorer, over 3,400 points in her time at Syracuse and overall in the NCAA. She leaves just such a legendary mark on this program, 23 points per game this season. I really don't see her not going in this draft. I think it can almost be say it's guaranteed for her to be drafted, but I'm somewhat nervous if she's going to really get a true shot at this league standing at 5'5". You don't see many players of her height in that league, and I really don't know if it's going to happen. I really hope it does. ESPN has her in there right now, but we just got to wait and see if she's going to be drafted.
The other interesting aspect of all of this is that the WNBA is such a smaller league, and so oftentimes there will be first-round draft picks that don't even end up on a roster the year that they're drafted.
Yeah, exactly.
And like so De'Asia Fair could be drafted first-round and then not make a team.
Yeah, 15 out of 36 were the only players to make it. She could be drafted, and you never see this in the NBA, and not be on a roster come fall.
The one thing I will say is that I just watched her play last week in the Women's Basketball All-Star Game.
Yep.
And she lit up the court, was huge down the stretch, scored the game-winning bucket with the Elam ending that they used. And, you know, she looked good against a whole team of women's college basketball's best players. Now, obviously, there is a step up to the WNBA, but if you pointed a gun at my head and asked, will De'Asia Fair make a roster and get some minutes next year in the WNBA, I would predict yes.
I'm going to agree with you. There's no way that she's not going to get minutes. She's a top three player in the WNBA, in my opinion. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say. The stats back that up. She really didn't get that much media coverage in Syracuse this year. She has the spotlight right now, and she needs to use it to her advantage. I see her getting on an WNBA roster in the fall.
We'll see what happens, and I'm sure we'll be checking in the month of August to kind of see what happens there. But until then, that's Dan Shalom. I'm Tyler Aiken. Thanks for tuning in to another Fizz 5, and as always, go Orange.
And that's your Fizz 5. Listen next week. Subscribe, rate, and review. This has been an Orange Fizz production.